You all look so beautiful. Thank you so much for being here. I am very grateful for this chance Srila Prabhupada has given us. So many chances. Whatever our shortcomings or disqualifications, He's eternally giving us a chance to associate with devotees, to render some service, to chant the holy names, and ultimately to find the joy of loving Krishna. There is no disqualification in all of creation. That can withstand the grace of a Vaishnava. If at any time we open our hearts with humility to receive it, dinahina yata chilo harinam udharilo tara sakshi jagai madhai. Narottam Das Thakur gives this as an example that the power of Krishna's name is so great that if we chant with sincerity under the guidance in the shelter of the grace of devotees, we can become perfect and pure. And the example is Jagai and Madhai. The scriptures take examples that are so extreme. Just to encourage us and give us hope that it's not impossible. I was recently reading from the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srila Prabhupada in one purport writes, what a Vaishnava is. Vaishnava means a true devotee of the Lord. Now in different places Srila Prabhupada explains different qualities of Vaishnava. Some places he says a Vaishnava is one who has no envy. One who is genuinely a well-wisher of everyone. Envy Oh, that was the best part of the class. We could see anything as a disturbance or as a blessing. Thank you. I remember one temple president of a temple. It was a large gathering of devotees. I was giving a class, and he said very strongly, everyone, turn off your cell phones. And then about 2 minutes later, as I was speaking, a cell phone was ringing really, really loud, and everyone was looking around thinking the president is really going to be angry at whoever this person is. And it was the temple president's cell phone. That was wonderful. If it was anyone else, you wouldn't all be laughing, even so many years later. Krishna tells Arjuna in the Gita that you can understand this message because you have no envy. What is envy? All of these qualities are emerging from the ahankar, from the false ego. When we want to be the enjoyer, controller, when we want to be thinking that I am the doer, or we think that other people are the doer, and when someone does something better than us, we become envious or depressed. If someone does something less than us, we become arrogant, considering I am superior. And that makes us feel good. It's a very lamentable state. Anandamayo vyashat, we are all looking for pleasure. It is our nature. Because the soul is Satchit Ananda, it is eternal, full of knowledge and full of pleasure. And that pleasure is in loving Krishna. And realizing that love in everyone and every situation. Because everything ultimately is connected to Krishna. But when we forget that, we have to find a substitute for that pleasure that we have turned our attention away from. And that search for pleasure so much corrupts us due to this false ego. We find pleasure being better than others. Whatever we may do, whether we're beautiful or strong or intelligent, or whether we have one skill or another skill, we feel pleasure when I do it better than someone else, when I'm getting more credit than someone else, when I'm getting more attention than somebody else. But however much we get can never satisfy us. No comment. I have many stories about cell phones, but because however much we succeed in being better than someone, we become infatuated by that pleasure. And to that degree, when it's frustrated, we suffer. Either we become depressed, I'm useless, I'm worthless, I'm a fool. Now, humble people say the same thing. But when they say it, it's completely different. Because when a humble person says that, a devotee is seeing the greatness of Krishna, because always remembering Krishna, and takes the ultimate pleasure in seeing Krishna's greatness, Krishna's beauty, Krishna's strength, Krishna's fame, Krishna's knowledge, Krishna's compassion. And when we put a candle before the sun, a enlightened person thinks, my pleasure is in the light of the sun. I'm insignificant, but my pleasure is there. So that brings us joy to think ourselves small. But when we're not humble, when we're egoistic, when our ego is crushed, dissatisfied, or simply not fulfilled, it's painful. And feeling ourselves worthless is miserable. It's depressing. Or even worse, it makes us envious. And therefore, the tendency to become competitive and somehow or other tear down somebody who's doing something better than me by one way or another. And the ego can justify anything and even make us believe it. But Srila Prabhupada explains a Vaishnava is not envious. And in this particular purport in the seventh canto, he writes that a Vaishnava tries to do the very best that he or she could do and deeply appreciates what everyone else is doing. Doesn't that sound simple? If we could just do that, we could be totally peaceful. We could be really happy. Just be grateful for the chance to serve. A grateful heart really cannot be an envious heart. A grateful heart is a humble heart. I get to serve, and I just try my best. And whatever it may be, I'm trying my best. And if somebody else is not doing as much as me, I really appreciate them. And Prabhupada says, and I even think that they're doing better than me. Because we see the good in them. Prabhupada says, this is Vaikuntha, where everyone is just trying to serve the best they can and totally happy and completely appreciate whatever service anyone else is doing, whether it's bigger or smaller. Because big and small is a material conception. Devotional service is on the level of devotion. We all know the story of Hanuman and the spider or squirrel, some say. But let us say spider. Little spider, not those big poisonous spiders. This little spider. Today in the car I was talking about spiders. When I was a little boy, I was afraid of spiders. I was really afraid of spiders. In fact, some of these impressions are ingrained in my mind. I remember in the corner of my bedroom, there was a spider about this big, with his legs. And I couldn't believe a spider's in the room that I sleep. So I remember I ran out of my room and locked the door from outside. I ran down to the kitchen. My mother was cooking. And I said, "Mother, mother, there's a spider in my room. Take it out, take it out." And she said, "Why are you so afraid?" And I said, "No, no, I can't. There's a spider in my room. I can't go in there." So she went up with a little piece of paper and threw him out the window or something like that. And I remember my mother took me to one holy person, and he said, "What is your name?" And I said, "Richard." He said, "Oh, Richard the Lionhearted." That's what this holy person said. "Oh, Richard the Lionhearted." And I was thinking, "God, that's really nice." And my mother looked at him and said, "Not at all." Still hurts. Got praised. He just put me like that. But then if for those of you who may have read this book, The Journey Home, when I was living in Himalayas, in Himachal Pradesh at the time, I don't know what it's called now because the states of India are always changing, but I was living in near Dharamshala, on a mountain in a cave. It's a real simple cave. Among caves, maybe 2 stars. Really, sadhus evaluate caves. And it was just a very small cave, and I was laying on the rocks, and I just had a candle. I had one candle. I had to make it last, because I only had one. So I remember I was laying, and the walls to the cave were just a few inches from my face. The biggest, most ferocious spider I ever saw in my life was crawling across the wall. And his legs were really long, and his body was extremely big, and he had long hairs. At least that's what it looked like to me. Candlelight. And each of his legs were moving one at a time, very like. And he was literally this far from my face, coming like this. And then there was a little hole about this deep, right here, and he just went right into it. And I immediately thought of that incident in my bedroom. I was only 20 at this time. And I remember thinking that if I want to become enlightened, I have to see everyone with equal vision. That's what I read in Bhagavad Gita. I mean, somehow or other, he's a living being, and this is his home, and I'm a living being, and right now this is my home, and he's probably lived here longer than me. He's my roommate. And I remember the lesson I learned from Kailash Baba. Kailash Baba was a sadhu in the Himalayas I knew. One day when I was in a place called Dev Prayag, I went early, early morning for the first time to bathe in the confluence of the Alaknanda and Bhagirath rivers. And because it was dark, it was probably 4:30 in the morning, it was very dark. I came down from the cave I was living and I couldn't see the current, I just saw the river. But the current was so fast that I don't think anybody could live by being swept away by that current. It was rushing so fast, and there were rocks in the ahead of it in the river. And the only way people could bathe there at that time of the year is you have to hold on to chains. There's these big chains that are nailed to rocks, and you hold on and you bathe like this. But I just was going for a purificatory bath, and I entered. All of a sudden, it just swept me off my feet, and I was just about to be rushing down the current really fast, and I couldn't see anything. And I thought, this is the end. Suddenly, this vice grip of something grabbed my arm and pulled me out. And he picked me up and threw me on the bank of the river, and then put his hand on my head and started chanting protective mantras. That was Kailash Baba. So I stayed with him for some time, and he wanted to teach me how to survive in the jungle. He showed me which herbs I could eat, and which leaves and fruits, which I shouldn't. Even certain barks of trees, he taught me how you can eat it. Berries. And he taught me how to study what monkeys eat to understand what I can eat. So many tricks. But very most importantly, he taught me how to live in a place where there happened to be leopards and panthers and wild elephants, cobras, vipers, scorpions, mosquitoes, and lots of spiders. He taught me that some of these animals, you have no power against them. They can kill you. A poison snake, a leopard. What chance do you have? He said, in order to live in the jungle, you have to see the divinity in them and appreciate it. If you think you are better than them, they are going to kill you. That's the law of living in the jungle. Because humans have very little rights without weapons. If you think that you are superior to them, they will kill you. And if you feel fear toward them, they will recognize that fear and attack you. So you have to be fearless, and you have to be humble, and offer them all respect. Amani namana dena, to offer all respect to others. And how to offer respect to animals? To see that the life force within them, the Atma, is part of God, spiritual, and sacred, to recognize and appreciate the sacredness of life wherever it is, in whatever form it may be encased within. Now, in college, you learn lessons, but then you think, I have time to understand these things before I actually get into the job market or whatever. But in this course, it was a crash course. Because as he's speaking to me, there's cobras, and there's leopards, and there's elephants. And the amazing thing is, in his association, I could actually feel fearless, and I can actually feel the sacredness in them. It's just the power of association. But here I was, all alone, in a cave, with this gigantic, ferocious, to me, it looked like a man-eating spider. And he's 6 inches from my face. And as I was thinking like that, the candle burned out. It was absolutely pitch dark. And I was wondering if the spider was going to come out of that little hole. I was thinking, God must have sent this spider. In those days, I didn't know who Krishna was. And I thought, God must have sent this spider because as long as that fear of my childhood remains in my heart, I'm not really going to be enlightened. I have to transcend it. And I realized, because you know the way the mind is? How many of you have this experience of the way the mind is? I recently read a scientific, psychological study that the average human being has 60,000 separate thoughts every day. And sometimes they contradict each other. And sometimes they're very reactionary to situations. So it was pitch dark, and I realized I can't overcome this fear. But then I just felt, if I just see this as God's will, that God sent this spider to help me to become spiritually advanced, then I can actually like this spider. And you know, for the next couple weeks, we lived as roommates. He would just crawl all around the cave. You know, every now and then I'd see him start eating insects. Now, you know, it's like eating just inches away from me. And I was thinking, yeah, I'm eating some, in those days I was eating something called tsampa, which is a Tibetan Buddhist dried barley that you mix with water. Didn't taste so good, but it lasts forever. And it doesn't cost anything. Actually, it tasted very good. So I'm eating this, and he's eating his food. And we became roommates. And after some time, I realized I've never had a roommate that I got along so good with. We never had a single disagreement. We never had a single argument or fight. He just did his thing and I did my thing, and I learned to love that spider, just like a pet. And in my own, maybe it was a sentimental way, but I was thinking that that spider loves me too. Sometimes at the beginning when he was going like this, I was thinking he was about to attack me. But then later on he did the same thing and I was thinking he's waving to me. So we could see the same thing in either situation. But back to Hanuman, he was building the bridge from Rameshwaram to Sri Lanka. Then there was that spider. He was kicking grains of sand. And Hanuman, by the grace of Ram, recognized, although I'm carrying mountain peaks that weigh thousands of tons and putting them for the bridge, and this spider is just taking one grain of sand at a time and putting it. We're doing exactly the same thing, because the spider's doing the best he can, and I'm doing the best I can. And what makes anything successful? Sam Siddhir Hari Toshanam. How we're pleasing Krishna. If Krishna's pleased with the sincerity and the honesty of our efforts, that is success from a spiritual perception. And that's all that really matters. And Prabhupada explains, Krishna doesn't see what we do. He sees our intention. He sees our sincerity. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, again and again, he would plead with us, just take this Krishna consciousness sincerely. Don't be arrogant. Don't be depressed. Don't be envious. Just try your best. And deeply from your heart, appreciate everyone else who's trying according to their own capacity. In this passage of the Bhagavatam, little Prahlad sits on the lap of his father, Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu, so happy to have his boy on his lap. Prahlad just offered his prostrated obeisances, bowing down, folded hands, honoring and respecting his father, sitting on the throne. His father puts him on his lap and embraces him with tears of fatherly affection. And what do you say to a little boy? You can't ask high philosophical questions. He just asked the simplest question to this five-year-old child, just to talk to him. Yes? Sometimes, you know, it's not what you say, it's that you just say something. It's an exchange of affection. That's what satisfies the heart, is the exchange of affection. So he said to little Prahlad, "What's the best thing you learned in school?" And he was expecting something like political science. The little Prahlad, with a little smile on his face, very humbly but with tremendous conviction, he responded, "Tat sadu manye suravaryate hinam sadasam udvignatiyam asat yatvatma patam grihamandakupam." He said, "My dear father, those who are, though," he actually said, he praised his father by saying, "My dear father, O best of the asuras, best of the demons, Now, if someone called you that, it would be an insult. But for Hiranyakashipu, that was the ultimate compliment. He was proud of being the best of the demons. So first Prahlad opened his heart up by praising him, according to time, place, person. And he says, for someone like you, who are so much attached to sensual enjoyment and false ego and selfishness, and your whole family life is just based around this egoness and selfishness, you're just laying in a deep, dark well where there is no water, but only suffering, and even if you cry out, no one will hear you. Father was not expecting that. He called for Prahlad's teacher, Shandanamarka, sons of Shukracharya, and said, who is teaching my son this deviant philosophy? This is the philosophy of a devotee, of Vishnu. And Vishnu is the killer of my brother, Hiranyaksha. He is my enemy. My son is being influenced by my enemy. Take him back to school. Find out who has done this and teach him properly. So little Prahlad was so respectful to everyone, but he was truthful. This balance is incredible. Amani Namanadena. He spoke the truth, but with love, with compassion, and with respect. There's a place in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat where Vrindavan Das Thakur says, anyone who criticizes Lord Nityananda, I kick him in the face with my foot. And that sounds pretty angry, doesn't it? But a great saint explained, actually he's being very respectful to those people. Because he's thinking that if he kicks them, then Nityananda is going to really shower his mercy on them and deliver them. See? Radha Gokulananda. So little Prahlad went back to the school, and the teachers, they were so angry with him. How is it that you are being influenced by our enemies? Where did you learn this from? And little Prahlad, with all honor and respect to his teachers, he said, I cannot see from the perspective of enemies and friends. This whole conception is what is spoiling the entire world. I see that everyone is part and parcel of Krishna, acting in various ways. I may or not like the ways, but we hate the disease, not the diseased. And Srila Prabhupada quotes from Bhagavad Gita in this context: Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavihastini suni chaiva swapake cha pandita samadarshana. That a humble sage who's endowed with real knowledge, sees every living being with equal vision. Whether one is a learned Brahmin, a priest, or whether one is male or female, black, white, red, yellow, brown, in color, whether one's from a rich family or a poor family, educated, uneducated, whether one's from the east or the west, whether one's in the parliament or whether one's in prison, whether one's a human or an elephant or a cow or a dog or a spider. Whatever it may be. Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Every living being is a part of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada explains that when we understand that every living being is a part of Krishna, we understand unity in diversity. That we are all individual. But at the same time, there was oneness among all of us. In essence, we're of the same substance. We're all servants of Krishna. And we see that the Paramatma, Krishna himself, is within the heart of every living being. This consciousness, Lord Chaitanya explains, amanina manadena, to offer all respect to others. And how is it possible that we don't need respect for ourselves? It means don't expect respect for yourself, but offer it all to others. How could we be happy that way? When we actually find happiness in respecting others, there's so much joy in that, we absolutely don't need any for ourselves. If we really feel this desperate need to be respected, it's very likely because we just haven't learned how to find joy in respecting others. Especially respecting Krishna. And when we respect Krishna, we understand that Krishna is in everyone. Krishna is the strength of the strong, the intelligency of the intelligence, the ability in people. So when we see somebody doing something wonderful, we understand it's Krishna through this person. And we respect, we honor, we love. That's happiness. Then Krishna, this is paramdrisvani vartate, this is the higher taste. And when we experience this higher taste of a service attitude, a devotional attitude, where we actually taste Krishna, then the Gita tells honor, dishonor, happiness, distress, pleasure, pain, health, disease, all these dualities, they're always coming and going. Matra sparshasta konteya sitosna sukadukada agamapayano nityas thams tatikshas vibharata. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the summer and winter seasons. They're always changing. Now it's kind of winter here, but you know for sure that winter's going to end and summer's going to come. Yes? But when summer comes, you know for sure that summer's going to end and winter's coming. So similarly, when pleasure comes, we know pain's going to come, and when pain comes, we know there's going to be some pleasure. So Gita tells, why take these so serious? Tolerate them and don't be disturbed. And the way to tolerate them is to absorb ourselves in that higher principle wherein we experience love, the love of God. To love God and to feel God's love is the higher principle. And to the degree we can actually connect to that in the path of bhakti, then honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, success, failure, victory, defeat, doesn't really matter. All that matters is we're trying our best. That's the very much basis of Gita. Krishna tells Arjuna, you just fight for the right cause of loving service to me with compassion to every living being. And a doctor, sometimes he shows compassion in certain ways. Yes, for any of you who have ever had surgery, sometimes the doctor's compassion is he causes you immense pain and suffering. Have any of you ever experienced that? But it's for a higher cause. So Krishna does that to devotees too. He sends different kinds of difficulties, obstacles, but it's always for a higher cause. If we recognize it, if we appreciate it and we respond to Tena Kampam Sasumiksha Mano with a grateful heart and take shelter, we're liberated. So little Prahlad, he could not tolerate this idea of friends and enemies because he was seeing his beloved in everyone. He had no envy and he had no fear. He seemed to learn things very nicely. Then Chandanamarka brought him back to father. Actually, they brought him back to mother. Usually you approach the father through the mother. It's usually a safer way of doing things, especially when Hiranyakashipu is the father. So the mother was so happy. She gave Prahlad a bath and put nice clothes and brought him before his father. And everybody said, he's just such a good student. Everything's so fine. He's so respectful and he's learning all his subjects so nicely. And his father was so happy. He said, come, Prahlad, sit in my lap. He put Prahlad on his lap and he smelled his head with affection and tears welled in his eyes. And he said, Prahlad, what is the best knowledge? Little Prahlad, not in a condescending way, that I'm better than you, your ignorant father, I'm enlightened, listen to me. He was just servant. He was just trying to serve and show love to his father. Sravanam kirtanam Vishnu smaranam padasevanam. So the best knowledge is to hear about Krishna, to chant his holy names, to sing about him, to speak about him, to remember him, to worship him, to offer prayers to him, to become his friend, to surrender everything to Krishna. This is what I learned is the best of all things. His father was really mad. Where did you learn this, Prahlad? First he chastised the teachers. What have you been doing to pollute my son? And the teacher said, we didn't teach him any of this. We don't know where. He's just naturally a devotee. There's nothing we can do about it. I use an example. Just like a thorn tree grows in a whole forest of sandalwood trees. And that thorn tree is used as a handle to an axe that cuts down the entire forest of sandalwood trees. They say Vishnu is the axe and Prahlad, although he's grown in the same family as all the rest of us, he's like a thorn tree. And if he's not destroyed, we will be destroyed. and evil. So Prahlad, Hiranyakashipu, where did you learn this from? Where is this enemy that has come and influenced you and polluted you in this way? Matirna Krishne Paratasvapova. He said, my father, one cannot attain Krishna consciousness as long as one is addicted to trying to enjoy selfish, materialistic, sensual activities, either by one's own efforts or with the help of others or by both. People like you are simply wasting your lives, puna punash charvata charvananam, chewing that which has already been chewed. And then Prahlad said, even if you have your so-called gurus and everything, but because you're all blind to the real truth, you and your so-called, you as a leader and your leaders, you are simply like blind men leading blind men, and you are all falling into the ditch of the darkness of ignorance. Your only hope, my father, is to bathe your entire body with the dust of the feet of the devotees of the Lord, who have no material, selfish ego. Hiranyakashipu did not like that. 5-year-old boy. That was the point where he said, kill this child. He must be killed before he kills us. If there is a diseased limb on the body, better to cut it off before the disease spreads and kills the whole body. So they tried to kill Prahlad in numerous ways. Prahlad never prayed for protection. He just remembered Krishna. He just fixed his mind on Krishna with gratitude and with love. And Krishna was always there for him. And ultimately, when Lord Narasingadev came and performed that historical surgical operation, Hiranyakashipu, right in front of little Prahlad's eyes, he saw his father getting... Can you imagine that? And he loved his father. But Prahlad understood that whatever's happening is the will of the Lord. It's for the good. And when the Lord asked Prahlad, take any benediction you like, little Prahlad said, please do not tempt me in this way. If I ask anything in return for my service from you, then I'm not a devotee. I'm just doing business with you. My service is unconditional. I want to give. I don't want to take. Narasingadev wanted, it will please me if you ask for a benediction. Please ask. Prahlad said, my father, he was so evil and he caused so much death, suffering to so many millions of people. There's no one worse than him in history. What kind of karma, now that he's dead, what kind of hellish karma is going to come upon him? Please, my Lord, give him liberation. When Prahlad talked about not seeing friends or enemies, he was seeing everyone as a well-wisher. He was the well-wisher of everyone. He discriminated. But there's so much to learn from this story of Prahlad. He was very philosophically astute in his discrimination of what's truth and what is illusion, what is favorable and what is unfavorable. But it was all done. Not in a competitive spirit, not with ego, not with envy, not with friends and enemies. He was doing it in the spirit of service to all. He was doing it in a spirit of compassion. To the man who tried to murder him, who hated him when he was only 5 years old, his own father, he could have asked for any benediction. He asked, give him liberation. And let me never forget you. And as long as there's anybody like Hiranyakashipu forgetful of you, let me come to this world on your behalf to try to help them to be happy in devotion. In Lord Chaitanya's Leela, there are two devotees who are compared to Prahlad. One is Haridas Thakur. He was beaten in 22 marketplaces by executioners who hated him, who tortured him, who were determined to murder him. And the whole while, he was praying to God to forgive them. He was praying, if I've done anything good for you, my Lord, please give them all devotion. Don't take it against them on my account. And years later, Lord Chaitanya said, when I saw those people trying to kill you, abusing you in such horrible ways, I sent my Sudarshan Chakra to kill them. But because your prayers for me to be merciful to them were so strong, my Sudarshan Chakra would not function. I couldn't release it. So I had no other alternative but to lay my own body over yours to take those beatings to keep you alive. And then the Lord showed Haridas those whip marks. So he's compared to Prahlad. And when those people beat him and beat him and beat him, finally they said, we're too tired to beat you anymore because you're still alive. We're going to be killed. So Prahlad said, I won't cause you any problem. Just see what I do. And Haridas just sat there and he died. No heartbeat, no pulse. So eventually they took him to the king and said, he's dead. What should we do with him? And they just considered him such a useless person. The Muslim people said, we can't bury him because he's so sinful. He's chanting Krishna's names. And the caste Hindus said, we can't burn him because he's born a Muslim. So what do you do with a person like this? People have these external conceptions. Haridas told the king at the very beginning, but he couldn't understand. There's only one God. He has different names. Allah, Rama, Krishna. Same person. He's the source of everything that exists. He's the all-merciful, compassionate father, mother of every living being. Why are we fighting? They were fighting even after he died. So they decided to just throw him in the river like a piece of garbage. So they threw him in a river. And Haridas was floating. And he was born again. He just came out of the dead. He was never actually dead. He was in samadhi. All of his life symptoms stopped. He was clinically dead. But his soul was within his body. Now, He was down the river where nobody was around. Now, for most of us, if we got beaten through 22 marketplaces like that, and we came alive down the river, we would have probably gone to the forest somewhere. But you know what Haridas did? He went right back to the king's palace. And the king bowed down to him and said, "You are a saint. You do whatever you like." So he's compared to Prahlad. And Vasudev Dutt, Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami's, he so much deeply appreciated and emulated the spirit of compassion. Vasudev Dutt prayed to the Lord, "I cannot tolerate seeing anyone suffer. I can't tolerate it. Please let everyone in the entire universe be liberated. And all the sins, all the karma for every living being in the universe." That means all the 8,400,000 species of life of everybody in the whole universe. "Let all their sins come on my head and let me suffer perpetually. But let them be happy with you in the spiritual world." Now think about that word, perpetually. It's scary, isn't it? Usually if we have a mosquito bite and it really itches, we just can't wait till it ends. Yes? Or in America, there's an epidemic in some places of bed bugs. Do you have bed bugs here in England? There's some places, New York, Boston, there's a lot of places. Bed bugs are spreading like anything. And you lay in bed, which is supposed to be the place you find shelter. And then these bugs start biting and biting. And how many of you have ever laid in a bed with bed bugs? Please raise your hand. I've had quite a few of those beds, actually. To be honest with you, that's one of the reasons I like to sleep on the floor. I never heard, you know, floor bugs are not as bad as bed bugs. But they just eat you, and you can't really sleep. And I remember recently I was in Boston, Massachusetts, and there was a place infested with bed bugs. And I tried to be philosophical about it. Not to me, because I was on the floor, but to the people who were in the beds. I said, "Try to understand that little spirit soul, who's the same size as you, 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair, is the size of a soul within this material world, that little spirit soul that is the predominating life force of the bed bug is just like you. You're in a human body, so you like to sleep and find pleasure in a bed. Yes? Well, that bed bug, it's not that he's some criminal or something. It's his nature, or her nature, I don't know." I'll have to confess, I don't know the difference between a male and female bedbug. But that little he or she bedbug, you are going to sleep for pleasure, and they are eating you for pleasure. What's the difference? Why are you so egoistic? Civil rights. Well, maybe not civil rights. You may do something with the bed bugs, but at least understand the principle. It's a spirit soul looking for pleasure, and you're a spirit soul looking for pleasure, but according to the body, according to the nature, you're looking for a different pleasure. But ultimately, either it's the bed bug soul or your soul, everyone is looking for Krishna. And little Prahlad said, just like a magnet naturally attracts metal, similarly, I am naturally attracted to Krishna. And nothing can change that. It's my nature. Srila Prabhupada explains, this is the crux of the difference between the material world and the spiritual world. The spiritual world, everyone is pure, therefore everyone is attracted to Krishna. Nanda Maharaj, as Krishna's father, Yashoda Mai, as Krishna's mother, day and night, they are simply attracted to giving pleasure to Krishna, to loving Krishna in every possible way. And the gopas, Sridhama, Subala, in their playful ways, they're eternally attracted to Krishna. And the gopis, Srimati Radharani, Lalita, Vishaka, the Manjaris, all gopis. Their life, their soul, their everything is simply being attracted to Krishna. His beauty, his sweetness, his flute, his love, his everything. Krishna is all attractive. That is the meaning of Krishna, all attractive. In Vrindavan, the trees, the flowers, the insects, the animals, the mountains, the stones, the rivers, the sky, the clouds, everything is ecstatically in love in their attraction to Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada explains that when that love for Krishna is there, there is spontaneous, natural love for every living being. Love for each other. You cannot love Krishna and not love each other. Because we see Krishna in everyone. We may not love what they do, we discriminate, but with compassion, with forgiveness, with love. That is a Vaishnava's mentality. And that's Vaishnav community. To do whatever we can to just purify our hearts, to be attracted to Krishna. Sarvapadiva niramuktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir. We have all these external artificial designations we identify with. The ego. But when we purify ourselves of this through seva, and the primary seva, seva mukhehi jivado, is by speaking about Krishna, by hearing about Krishna, and by sincerely chanting the holy names.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
Through purification of the seva, of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, gradually we become attracted to Shri Radha Gokulananda. and the curtain of Maya is forever removed. And then we're happy and grateful to just do everything we can to serve. And we can deeply, genuinely appreciate, honor, and respect the service of all others. And when we see someone else being blessed, that is our greatest happiness. Thank you very much.
His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj ki.
I'm sorry if I talk too much, but hopefully you'll be more enthusiastic to have kirtan at this time. Please, everyone, dance.